Hi, this is David Marlett, coming to you with another episode of Cinemersia here on Creative Disturbance. And I am very pleased to be joined today with Daniel Goucher. Daniel, you and I have done some work together on this manslaughter project, and we're just beginning to do it. But I'm really glad you're coming and visiting with us today. You come at the subject of VR cinema and narrative from an interesting and a little different point of view from some other people I've visited with, in the sense that you come from a little more of a traditional cinema background.
Yep.
So I'll just pause here a moment and let you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what interests you in this field, and we'll go from there.
All right, sure, David. My background is as a television editor. I have over 20 years in editing narrative. And the second half of my career, I was a professor, which I am now. I'm kind of bringing these rules to the students, trying to explain post-production in the narrative environment.
And you're at Emerson, right?
That's right, up at Emerson College in Boston. Definitely a film school, but the school itself is looking now towards, you know, VR as a narrative tool and all the potential that that has. And also, too, of course, how it's going to change the rules of production and post. I think there's a big redefinition here coming up in how we actually use narrative in a VR environment.
Yeah, it's a brave new world. I don't know of anything that's comparable to, at least not in our lifetimes. I mean, sometimes I think you have to go back to the Great Train Robbery. I mean, you've got to go back to some of the early days of cinema. Would you agree?
Oh, it's funny you say that. Right here in front of me, I made a list of some of the steps that cinema has gone through in the last 100 years to build up the language, the audiovisual language that we use nowadays, and we take for granted. Like you're saying, going all the way back to 1903, 1904 with Edwin Porter, when he was trying to figure out how do you cut one shot next to another. You had D.W. Griffith with Birth of a Nation starting to do close-ups, flashbacks, steering the eye of the viewer in the frame. And then, of course, the Russians with juxtaposition and the French with their jump cuts. And, you know, these rules have built over 100 years. And like you're saying now, you know, everything is changing because we don't have the frame anymore to count on.
Yeah, absolutely. It is definitely a situation where we're having to rethink in terms of what is it for the audience to have an experience in this cinema. I mean, what can they do? What do they want to do? I mean, and of course, I think we're going to have this educational curve at first. I mean, just as they did when they were running out of the theater from the train and Great Train Robbery. Yeah. You know, I think we're going to have this what the hell is this sort of approach here at first, which is challenging, and yet it's also exciting.
I think a lot of people now, when they're thinking of producing VR, are kind of back at the Lumiere brothers stage, where it's sort of passive and observational, because everybody's scared. They're scared to do the trial and error that the Russians or the French did, because you don't want to disorient or discomfort a viewer, but until we kind of try things, figure out what works and what doesn't, we're never really going to create this new set of rules.
Yeah, and we've got to get out there. And I think that's certainly, I know, you and I are working on a project right now that's doing that. What do you think are, when you look at this, and I realize we're somewhat in the guessing game. Of course, the big benefit is that we do have these 100-some-odd years of watching cinema, and now with this overlay of what the modern audience has become used to, as well as through other media forms, what do you think are two things I'm going to ask, and you can take them however you'd like. One is, what do you think are the big challenges? And then the other is, what are you, on the challenges, I guess I mean more, some of the negatives, the potential negatives, the potential pitfalls. And the other is, what are you most excited about? What are you most anxious to see relative to narrative?
All right. Well, I was trying to think of how you would make a successful VR experience and what the role of editing or even post-production would be in that. I feel bad right now, of course, for the poor editor, because I don't know if there's a real win-win situation yet.
Yeah.
I mean, the voice of the editor, it goes unseen a lot of times. The audience isn't necessarily aware of the techniques that are going on to manipulate psychology in a film or emotion in a film, and
Right.
I would say fairly that more than half of that, lies in the hands of the editor.
Absolutely.
So now, when I think of VR now, the role of the editor and the possible pitfalls, I think at first VR is probably going to take a more theatrical approach, and the editor, in a lot of ways, I think, has to hang back for a while until people are a little more used to the form, the art form. So
And
maybe
what
I
you're
would say,
meaning, and let me jump in there
oh
because
yeah,
you and
go
I
ahead.
understand that, but what we're talking about for the listeners is that at least the anticipation right now is that we're doing long takes,
Yes,
that we're
exactly.
not f cutting the audience into different scenarios too much. Although we may quickly find that that's not the problem we think it is. Or, I mean, that's my thoughts on it. I don't
Oh
know.
no, I agree. That's right now, like I'm thinking it's a theatrical style now because it's a safe style.
Right.
If you have essentially, if you're relying on techniques like blocking or placement of actors or objects, foreground and background, this kind of theatrical upstaging, downstaging kind
Right.
of blocking,
Right.
that's a safe system. And ironically, that goes back to a Lumiere brothers style of just passive on the part of post-production.
Right.
You're familiar, say, for instance, with Manslaughter using a quadrant system,
Right.
having a primary action area and then secondary and a tertiary area and steering the viewer across four quadrants.
Right.
That might be another way, but that's minimal post-production again.
Right.
Maybe another safe method might be negative space, having parts in the 360-degree view that are dead areas. And you might say, well, that's a waste of space, but Orson Welles effectively used that in Citizen Kane because
Sure.
he couldn't afford to build giant mansions, so he built a big staircase with his art department and left parts of the frame in black and let people's imaginations fill in missing areas of the picture.
Right.
And then lastly, when you think about it, when we talk about how there's no rules at all right now in the production or post-production of VR, I don't know if your viewers have even really considered the fact that there's this agreed upon point of view where they're looking out, that a 360-degree view always assumes that you're the center of the picture. But you could just as easily have an array of cameras around an object or, even around a
Right.
drama scene. They've done this in sports where they'll circle an entire stadium with cameras,
Right.
and that allows somebody to have a 360-degree view around a center point.
Well, kind of like Chris Milk's early thing with Beck, in a sense. I mean, that brings that to mind.
And that's
You know, back in the ancient days of this, you know, 11 months ago.
I know it's crazy, but that when you think about editing, if think about that, if we had an outside view, right? If you circle an event or circle a drama scene with cameras,
Right.
does that not allow the audience then to become the editor? Because they'll choose the angle that they want to be watching the scene at. They'll choose the proximity to the scene, how close or how far back they are.
Yeah, it's theater and around where you get to choose that, and thus the opening up those directorial choices of not just I need to make this play for every audience member around. It's Yeah, come on around to this side and you'll see something you didn't see if you came to that side.
I mean that.
I think that potential for audience participation, you know, it's somewhere a hybrid to me. It's somewhere between passive and active. It's a sort of yes, you can turn your head. There's nominal movement because it's not an animated space, but that's still not entirely passive. And we're doing that with manslaughter. I mean, if you turn and see certain things. So when you look at editing in the sense of it's also editing in the sense of not just in the story, but also in creating a product. It has a very utilitarian purpose of we're going to create something that's that's gonna play on at a cinema, or where you're making a film that can be compressed. You're making, I mean, it's not more than just simply, not simply, but more than the what we think of primarily is cutting the narrative together and making the story. At the end, the result, the editor also creates a product that can then be played. That takes us into distribution. And to me, I see, and I'll just say this, and then I'll let you respond whatever comes to mind. But I see an interesting role with the editor in this technological space of transforming the directorial vision into a workable product in a environment where that is still yet to be defined. Am I making sense somewhat?
I think at the heart of what you're saying is you're asking, maybe what's gonna be an acceptable experience or an acceptable product on the other end. And the director obviously has challenges now because they have to, in a way, think of how the audience is going to be placed, how the audience is going to take this. And then the editor, of course, now as the middleman, has to ask, is editing, useful? Is it still helping the continuity? Is it helping that illusion of real time unfold? Do I take more of a hands-off approach? What's the psychological impact now of making an edit? Is it disorienting? And so basically, I think that the director, in a lot of ways, now has to think part editor, and the editor, in a lot of ways, really has to think less manipulator or less, in control, and be kind of more understanding from the audience point of view, and not, it's weird, but it is a weird time for editor and I guess director also alike, I would say,
Yeah, it's the editorial role. I mean, I think we're still going to find ourselves, I think we're going to find ourselves learning how to make jump cuts and how to make transitions that don't make people upset at their stomachs or completely lost relative to the. And I think it's useful that we have an audience that is not only educated to rapid edits, but has come to expect them to some extent.
It will have to. It's going to be a lot of trial and error, and I can't tell you right now what watching, The Matrix in a 360 degree environment would be like. I'll be able to tell you probably, I'm sure, in the far future, which, as you said before, might be 6 months from now. But it's going to be some trial and error. But I agree with you that most of the people who have access to virtual reality in the early stages here are going to be people with a certain probably technical knowledge or an interest at least in the possibilities of this medium, and I think that that's a good group of guinea pigs to try this stuff on, if you ask me, before it goes into mass commercial release, which again you're probably talking a year or two. This medium could be a commercial release medium.
Absolutely. Which again is right around the corner, and yet in this, in dog years, in VR years, that's a long time. And do you think there's a impact that a lot of our, as you call, guinea pigs on this are coming from the gaming community? Does that inform the editor?
See, yes and no. Gaming, I think, has an interactive element, but that interactive element is based on the cutscene because that's the acceptable method used in games now. So if you're talking about VR in a gaming world, you're talking about a 360 environment where you're doing some type of gaming action, and it lends to a 360 environment. That's fine because you have control over the direction you're going and the interaction you're having on a moment by moment basis. But if you go into the more narrative elements of a game, it's usually done with a cutscene where the audience is relatively passive for that time. The problem here with narrative is that the question is, do you have that level of control, like the gaming part of a game, or are you going to be in the passive narrative mode where the director and the editor are trying to give you an experience? And again, is the audience going to be happy being passive? Do they want a narrative that's a more cutscene type environment where I say, okay, I'm done with this part of the plot, now I want to go to that part of the plot? So really, it's the gamers are good in that they're comfortable with the technology, but I don't think that it's necessarily a great test of the narrative flow on a gaming community.
Yeah, I think their first reaction is going to be wanting to grab the reins and control it, and understandably so. And you know, when I describe manslaughter, I'm often one of the first things people say is, "Oh, can I go anywhere I want?" And
Right, exactly.
I'm like, "No, can you imagine the terabytes if I suddenly am going to film this where, you know, as if it was, I mean,
And the flow
it's
chart, the
already
second screen.
massive enough."
Yeah, exactly.
But I still do think, like on the next project we're working on, where it's, you know, more linear flow and hopefully shooting it a little bit differently, we might be able to do some things where you're putting a 360 camera on a track. So at least you have a choice of a narrative flow that you can then choose. But maybe all the actors leave a room and you decide if you stare at the door long enough, you can follow them into the next scene.
Right. That would be kind of a cutscene method, right? Going from cutscene to cutscene, but you know, the audience has an option there on how the plot unfolds in the narrative.
Yeah, the okay, and now I'm ready to see that next scene, not you've suddenly made me jump into this other environment. Well, it's going to be it's an exciting time. It really is, and I have to say, on just a personal level, I'm very pleased to be working on at least certainly this project with you,
Thank you. Yeah.
and us to ex exploring these avenues together. So what's
It's nice to see people that are you know trying to figure out the rules of this new medium because I think this one's around to stay for quite a while.
I think so too. I think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, that's certainly has been a in the out there discussed. Is it here to stay this time, or is this another 90s blip? And I think we're all in agreement that, yeah, there's too many billions and too much technology that's here that's going to, you know, keep it around.
Yeah, I agree.
Before we go, and our time's about up here, you're at Emerson, and I know you're, like you say, you guys are a film school, but you're starting to look in this. Where do you see on the academic, are you seeing things on the academic level that, or do you have any, I was curious, I don't mean to pull a question here, throw you a loop here at the end, but I'm just curious as to your perspective on the academic level, what you're starting to see. Are you starting to see, you know, you and I are interested in it, but are you starting to see it at an institutional level, an
So,
interest?
like curriculum development in the
Yeah.
world of VR. It's funny you say that because academia right now is still getting over the relative death of film as a medium. And granted that that all the rules have carried forward into digital production, but people have a hard time sometimes letting go of
Sure.
tools. And each tool, of course, has its own function. You can't completely cut out film, but
Sure.
I'll tell you, looking forward, I think that because we're in a digital realm now, people have had to learn to be adaptable because the tools change so fast, because the opportunities it presents. And so do I see VR working its way into the curriculum? Yes, I do. Does the demand, commercial demand for that spur it forward? It will. So
It will,
basically,
yeah.
The college is thinking ahead of itself. It's trying to get ahead of any market that'll come around in a couple of years. Academically, it's a fascinating topic to just discuss and philosophize over
Yeah.
and realize the potential of.
Well, let's do that some more sometime. I really
Fantastic.
appreciate your time today. And like I say, I look forward to us continuing to work together, and thanks for this chat.
Thank you, David. It's been great.
Very good. Thanks.